Mama said. I know the system. My dad's a lawyer.
They'd put him in jail.
For what? A day? Two? He'd come back for me. Or you. Or Lenny. Do you think I could live with putting other people at risk? And, well...
Lenny heard Mama's unspoken words. I love him. Mr. Walker stared down at Mama, who was so bruised and bandaged she barely looked like herself.
All you have to do is ask for help, he said quietly. I want to help you, Cora. Surely you know I...
You don't know me, Tom. If you did...
Lenny saw tears gather in her mother's eyes.
There's something wrong with me, she said slowly. Sometimes it feels like a strength, and sometimes like a weakness, but I don't know how to stop loving him.
Cora!
Lenny heard her father's voice and saw how Mama shrank into the pillows behind her. Mr. Walker lurched away from her bedside. Dad ignored Mr. Walker completely, shoved past him.
Oh my God, Cora, are you okay?
Mama seemed to melt in front of him.
We crashed the bus.
What were you doing out in that weather?
He said, but he knew. Lenny saw it in his eyes. There was a deep scratch on his cheek. Mr. Walker backed toward the door, a big man trying to disappear. He gave Lenny a sad, knowing look and left the room, closing the door quietly behind him.
We needed food,
Mama said.
I wanted to make you a special dinner.
Dad laid his work-calloused hand against her bruised, swollen cheek as if his touch could heal her.
Forgive me, baby. I'll kill myself if you don't.
Don't say that, Mama said. Don't ever say that. You know I love you. Only you.
Forgive me,
he said. He turned.
And you too, Red. Forgive a stupid man who can't get his shit together sometimes, but who loves you. And who will do better.
I love you,
Mama said, and she was crying now too. And suddenly, Lenny understood the reality of her world. The truth that Alaska, in all its beautiful harshness, had revealed. They were trapped by environment and finances, but mostly by the sick, twisted love that bound her parents together. Mama would never leave Dad. It didn't matter that she'd gone so far as to take a backpack and run to the bus and drive away. She would come back always because she loved him, or she needed him, or she was afraid of him. Who knew, really? Lenny couldn't begin to understand the hows and whys of her parents' love. She was old enough to see the turbulent surface, but too young to know what lay beneath. Mama could never leave Dad, and Lenny would never leave Mama, and Dad could never let them go. In this terrible, toxic knot that was their family, there was no escape for any of them. That night, they took Mama home from the hospital. Dad held Mama as if she were made of glass, so careful, so concerned for her well-being. It filled Lenny with an impotent rage. And then she'd get a glimpse of him with tears in his eyes, and the rage would turn soft and slide into something like forgiveness. She didn't know how to corral or change either of these emotions. Her love for him was all tangled up in hate. Right now, she felt both emotions crowding in on her, each jostling for the lead. He got Mama settled in bed and immediately went out to chop wood. There was never enough on the pile, and Lenny knew that physical exertion helped him somehow. Lenny sat by her mother's bedside for as long as she could, holding her mother's cold hand. She had so many questions she wanted to ask, but she knew the ugly words would only make her mother cry, so Lenny said nothing. The next morning, Lenny was climbing down the ladder when she heard Mama crying. Lenny went into Mama's bedroom and found her sitting up in bed, just a mattress on the floor, leaning back against the skinned log wall, her face swollen, both eyes black and blue, her nose just slightly to the left of where it belonged.
Don't cry, Lenny said. You must think the worst of me,
Mama said, gingerly touching the split in her lip.
I baited him, didn't I? Said the wrong thing. I must have.
Lenny didn't know what to say to that. Did Mama mean that it was her fault? That if Mama was quieter or more supportive or more agreeable, Dad wouldn't explode? It didn't seem true to Lenny, not at all. Sometimes he snapped and sometimes he didn't. That was all there was. Mama taking the blame seemed wrong, dangerous even.
I love him, Mama said, staring down at her cast-encased arm. I don't know how to stop, but I have you to think about, too. Oh, my God, I don't know why I'm like this, why I let him treat me this way. I just can't forget who he was before the war. I keep thinking he'll come back, the man I married.
You won't ever leave him, Lenny said quietly. She tried not to make it sound like an indictment.
Would you really want that? I thought you loved Alaska, Mama said.
I love you more. And I'm afraid, Lenny said.
This time was bad, I'll admit, but it scared him. Really, it won't happen again. He promised me.
Lenny sighed. How was Mama's unshakable belief in Dad any different than his fear of Armageddon? Did adults just look at the world and see what they wanted to see, think what they wanted to think? Did evidence and experience mean nothing? Mama managed a smile.
You want to play Crazy Eights?
So that was how they would do it. Merge back into the driving lane after a blown tire. They would say ordinary things and pretend none of it had happened. Until the next time. Lenny nodded. She retrieved the cards from the rosewood box that held her mother's favorite things and sat down on the floor beside the mattress.
I'm so lucky to have you, Lenny,
Mama said, trying to organize her cards with one hand.
We're a team, Lenny said. Peas in a pod. Two of a kind.
Words they said all the time to each other, words that felt a little hollow now, maybe even sad. They were halfway through the first game when Lenny heard a vehicle drive up. She tossed the cards on the bed and ran to the window.
It's Large Marge, she yelled back to Mama. And Mr. Walker.
Shit, Mama said. Help me get dressed.
Lenny ran back to Mama's bedroom and helped her take off her flannel pajamas and get into a pair of faded jeans and an oversized hooded sweatshirt with sleeves big enough to accommodate the cast. Lenny brushed Mama's hair and then helped her out to the living room, got her situated on the ragged sofa. The cabin door opened. Snow fluttered inside on a wave of icy air, brushed across the plywood floor. Large Marge looked like a grizzly in her huge fur parka and mucklucks, with a wolverine hat that looked to have been handmade. Earrings made of antler bone hung from her sagging earlobes. She stomped the snow from her boots and started to say something. Then she saw Mama's bruised face and muttered,
Son of a frickin' bitch. I should kick his beef jerky ass.
Mr. Walker came in to stand behind her.
Hey,
Mama said, not quite making eye contact with him. She didn't stand. Maybe she wasn't strong enough.
Would you like some?
Dad pushed his way in, slammed the door shut behind him.
I'll get him coffee, Cora. You stay put.
The tension between the adults was unbearable. What was happening here? Something, that was for sure. Large Marge took Mr. Walker by the arm, a firm, fish-landing grip, and led him to a chair by the wood stove.
Sit down, she said, shoving him into the chair when he didn't move fast enough.
Lenny grabbed a stool from beside the card table and dragged it into the living room for Large Marge.
That itty-bitty thing? Large Marge asked. My ass is going to look like a mushroom on a toothpick.
Still, she sat down. Planting her fleshy hands on her hips, she looked at Mama.
It's worse than it looks, Mama said in an uneven voice. We had a car crash, you know.
Yeah, I know,
Large Marge said. Dad came into the living room, carrying two blue-speckled cups full of coffee. Steam rose up from them, scented the air. He handed Tom and Large Marge each a cup.
So,
he said uneasily.
We haven't had winter guests in a while. Sit down, Ernst,
Large Marge said.
I don't.
Sit down or I'll knock you down,
Large Marge said. Mama gasped. Dad sat down on the sofa beside Mama.
That's not really the way to talk to a man in his own home.
You don't want to get me started on what a real man is, Ern Albright. I'm holding on to my temper, but it could run away with me, and you do not want to see a big woman come at you. Trust me. So shut your trap and listen.
She glanced at Mama.
Both of you.
Lenny felt the air leave the room. A chilling, weighted silence came in, pressed down on them. Large Marge looked at Mama.
I know you know I'm from D.C. and that I used to be a lawyer. Big city prosecutor. Wore designer suits and high heels, the whole shebang. I loved it. And I loved my sister, who married the man of her dreams. Only he turned out to have a few problems, a few quirks. Turned out he drank too much and liked to use my baby sis as a punching bag. I tried everything to get her to leave him, but she refused. Maybe she was scared. Maybe she loved him. Maybe she was as sick and broken as he was. I don't know. I know that when I called the police, it was worse for her, and she begged me not to do it again. I backed off. Biggest mistake of my life. He went after her with a hammer.
Large Marge flinched.
We had to have a closed casket funeral. That was what he'd done to her. He claimed he'd taken the hammer from her and protected himself. The law isn't kind to battered women. He's still out there, free. I came up here to get away from all that.
She looked at Ernst.
And here you are.
Dad started to rise.
I'd sit if I were you,
Mr. Walker said. Dad slowly sank back down. Anxiety shone in his eyes, showed in the hands he flexed and unflexed. His booted foot tapped nervously on the floor. They had no idea what this little meeting would cost Mama. As soon as they left, he'd explode.
You probably mean well, Lenny said. But...
No,
Mr. Walker said in a kind voice.
This isn't for you to solve, Lenny. You're a kid. Just listen.
Tommy and I have talked about this, Large Marge said. Your situation here. We have a couple of solutions, but really, Ernst, our favorite one is we take you out and kill you.
Dad laughed once, then went silent. His eyes widened when he realized they weren't joking.
That's my choice, actually, Mr. Walker said. Large Marge has a different plan. Ernst, you're going to pack your shit up and go to the slope,
Large Marge said.
The pipeline is hiring men like you. It's a Sodom and Gomorrah up there, and they need mechanics. You'll make a pile of money, which you need, and you'll be gone until spring. I can't leave my family alone until spring,
Dad said.
How thoughtful you are,
Mr. Walker muttered.
You think I'll just leave her to you?
Dad said.
Enough, boys,
Large Marge said.
You can clank antlers later. For now, Ernst is leaving, and I'm moving in. I'll stay with your girls for the winter, Ernst. I'll keep them safe from everything and everyone. You can come back in the spring. By then, maybe you'll know what you've got, and treat your wife as she deserves. You can't make me go,
Dad said.
That's not the A answer,
Large Marge said.
Look, Ernst, Alaska brings out the best and the worst in a man. Maybe if you'd stayed outside, you never would have become who you are now. I know about Nam, and it breaks my heart what you boys went through. But you can't handle the dark, can you? It's nothing to be ashamed of. Most folks can't. Accept it and do what's best for your family. You love Cora and Lenny, don't you?
Dad's expression changed as he looked at Mama. Everything about him softened. For an instant, Lenny saw her dad, the real him, the man he would have been if the war hadn't ruined him, the man from before.
I do,
he said.
Perfect. You love them enough to leave and provide for them,
she said.
Go pack your shit and hit the road.
We'll see you again at breakup.
1978. 12. 17-year-old Lenny drove the snow machine with confidence in the falling snow. She was all alone out here in the vastness of winter. Following the glow of her headlights in the pre-dawn dark, she turned onto the old mine road. Within a mile or so, the road became a trail that twisted and turned and rose and fell. The plastic sled behind her thumped on the snow, empty now, but she hoped that soon it would hold her latest kill. If there was one thing her dad had been right about, it was this. Lenny had learned to hunt. She hurtled over embankments and around trees and across frozen rivers, airborne on the snow machine sometimes, skidding out of control, sometimes shrieking in joy or fear or a combination of the two. She was completely in her element out here. As the elevation increased, the trees became sparser, scrawnier. She began to see cliffs and snow-covered granite outcroppings. She kept going, up, down, around, bursting through banks of snow, careening around dead logs. It took so much concentration, she couldn't think or feel anything else. On a hill, the snow machine slid left, lost traction. She eased back on the gas, slowed, stopped. Breathing hard through the slits in her neoprene face mask, Lenny looked around. Sharp white mountain peaks, blue-white glaciers, black granite. She dismounted, shivering. Bracing against the wind, she untied her pack and put on snowshoes, then pushed the snow machine to the limited protection afforded by a large tree and tarped it. This was as far as the vehicle could take her. The sky overhead was lightening by degrees. Daylight expanded with each breath. The trail turned upward, narrowed. She saw her first clot of frozen sheep scat within half a mile and followed the hoof prints higher uphill. She brought out her binoculars and scanned the white landscape around her. There, a cream-colored dull sheep with huge curving horns, walking along a high ledge, its hooves dainty on the rough, snowy terrain. She moved carefully, made her way along the narrow ridge, and hiked up into the trees. There, she found tracks again and followed them to a frozen river. Fresh scat. The sheep had crossed the river here, crashing through the ice, splashing through the river. Big chunks of ice poked up, bobbed, held in place by the solid ice around them. An old tree lay across the ice, its frozen limbs splayed out, water stirring in patches alongside. Snow swirled across the ice, collecting on one side of the log, fanning away in tiny whirlwinds on the other side. Here and there, the wind had brushed all of the snow away, leaving glistening, cracked patches of silver-blue ice. She knew it was unsafe to cross here, but anywhere else could cost her hours. And who knew if there would even be a good crossing point? She hadn't come all this way to quit. Lenny tightened her pack and tied down her hunting rifle, took off her snowshoes, and tied them to her pack, too. Staring down at the log, which was about 2 feet in diameter, its bark peeling away, frozen, covered with snow and ice, she took a deep breath and climbed onto it on all fours. The world became as narrow as the log, as wide as the river. Rough, icy bark bit into her knees. The cracking of the ice was like gunfire exploding around her. She stared down the barrel of the log. There. The other shore, that was all she would think about, not the creaking ice or the frigid water running beneath. Certainly not the idea of falling through. She crawled forward inch by inch, wind whipping across her, snow peppering her. The ice cracked, hard, loud. The log crashed downward, breaking through the ice in front of her. Water splashed up, pooled on the ice, caught what little light there was. The log made a deep snapping sound and thunked down deeper, hit something. Lenny lurched to her feet, found her balance, held her arms out. The log seemed to be breathing beneath her. The ice cracked again, a roar of sound this time. There were maybe 7 feet between her and the shore. She thought of Matthew's mother, whose body had been found miles from where she had gone through the ice and ravaged by animals. You didn't want to fall through the ice. There was no telling where your body would be found. Water ran everywhere in Alaska, revealed things that should stay hidden. She inched forward. When she neared the opposite shore, she launched herself upward, arms and legs flailing as if she could will herself to take flight, and crashed into the snow-covered rocks on the other side. Blood. She tasted it, warm and metallic in her mouth, felt it sliding down one ice-cold cheek. Suddenly, she was shivering, aware of the dampness of her clothes, whether from sweat or water droplets on her wrists or in her boots, she didn't know. Her gloves were wet, as were her boots, but both were waterproof. She crawled to her feet and assessed the damage. She had a superficial forehead laceration, and she'd bitten her tongue. The cuffs of her parka sleeves were wet, and she thought some water had splashed down her neck. Nothing bad. Resettling her pack and repositioning her rifle, she went off again, began hiking away from the river while keeping it in view. She followed the tracks and scat, up and up, across jutting shelves of rock. This high up, the world was dead quiet. Everything was blurred by the falling snow and her breath. Then, a sound. The crack of a branch, a snap of hooves sliding on rock. She smelled the musky scent of her prey. She eased between two trees, lifted her weapon. She peered through the sight, found the male sheep, took aim. She breathed evenly. Waited, then pulled the trigger. The sheep didn't make a sound, a perfect shot right on target, no suffering. The sheep crashed to its knees, crumpled, slid down the rock face, and came to a stop at a snowy ledge. She trudged through the snow toward her kill. She wanted to field dress the animal and get the meat in her pack as quickly as possible. This was technically an illegal kill. The hunting season for sheep was in the fall, but an empty freezer was an empty freezer. She guessed that the animal would dress out at about 100 pounds. It would be a long trek back to the snow machine, carrying all that weight. Lenny maneuvered the snow machine down the long white driveway toward the cabin. She kept a light hand on the throttle, moved slowly, aware of every dip and turn. In the past 4 years, she had grown like everything grew in Alaska. Wild. Her hair hung almost to her waist, she never saw any reason to cut it, and had turned a deep mahogany red. Her pudgy little girl face had thinned, her freckles had faded away, left her with a milky complexion that accentuated the aqua of her eyes. Next month, her father would return to the cabin. For the past 4 years, Dad had followed the rules laid down by Tom Walker and Large Marge. Grudgingly, and with a bad attitude, he'd done as they recommended. After Thanksgiving every year, usually just as his nightmares were starting to increase and when he started muttering to himself and picking fights, he left for the North Slope to work on the pipeline. He made good money, which he sent home every week, money they'd use to better their life up here. They now had goats and chickens and an aluminum skiff for fishing and a garden that thrived inside a domed greenhouse. The VW had been traded in for a reasonably good truck. An old hermit lived in the bus now, up in the woods around McCarthy. Dad was still a hard man to live with, volatile and moody. He hated Mr. Walker with a dangerous intensity, and the smallest disappointment, or whiskey and Mad Earl, could still set him off. But he wasn't stupid. He knew Tom Walker and Large Marge were watching him closely. Mama still said, "He's better, don't you think?" And Lenny sometimes believed it. Or maybe they'd adapted to their environment, like the ptarmigans who turned white in the winter. In the darkening month before he left for the pipeline, and on the winter weekends when he came home to visit, they studied Dad's moods like scientists, noting the tiniest twitch of an eye that meant his anxiety was rising. Lenny learned how to diffuse her father's temper when she could, and get out of the way when she couldn't. Her interference, she had learned the hard way, only made things worse for Mama. Lenny pulled into the white yard, noticed Tom Walker's big truck parked alongside Large Marge's International Harvester. Parking between the chicken coop and the cabin, Lenny stepped off the snow machine, her booted foot sinking into the crusty, dirty snow. Down here, the weather was changing fast, warming. It was late March. Soon the icicles would start to drip water from the eaves in a constant patter, and snow melt in the higher elevations would run downhill and turn their yard to mud. She untied the field-dressed carcass from the red plastic sled that the snow machine towed. Hefting the bloody, white-bagged meat over her shoulder, she trudged past the animals, clucking, bleeding at her arrival, and went up the now solid stairs and into the cabin. Warmth and light immediately enfolded her. Her breath, which she'd seen only seconds before, disappeared. She heard the hum of the generator, which powered the lights. The little black wood stove, the one that had always been there, pumped out heat. Music blared from the big portable radio on the new dining room table. Some disco song by the Bee Gees was cranked up. The cabin smelled of baking bread and roasting meat. You could always tell when Dad was gone. Everything was easier and more relaxed in his absence. Large Marge and Mr. Walker sat at the big rectangular dining table Dad had made last summer, playing cards.
"Hey, Lanny, make sure they're not cheating,"
Mama yelled from the kitchen alcove, which had been redesigned piecemeal over the years. A propane oven had been hauled in, as well as a refrigerator. Mr. Walker had tiled the counter and put in a better dry sink. There was still no running water and no bathroom in the cabin. Large Marge had built a rack for the dishes they bought when they went to the Salvation Army in Homer.
"Oh, they're cheating," Lenny said, smiling.
"Not me,"
Large Marge said, popping a chunk of reindeer sausage in her mouth.
"I don't need to cheat to beat these two. Come on over, Lenny. Give me a run for my money."
Chuckling, Mr. Walker got up, his chair screeching across the plank floor.
"Looks like someone bagged a sheep."
He pulled a big white plastic sheet out from underneath the sink and spread it out on the floor. Lenny thumped her load down onto the plastic and knelt beside it.
"I did," she said. "Up by Porter Ridge."
She opened the bag and pulled out the field-dressed carcass. Mr. Walker, sharpened in Ulu, handed it to her. Lenny set about her task of cutting the haunch into steaks and roasts and tearing away the silvery skeins from the meat. Once it had seemed weird to butcher meat in the house on a sheet of plastic. No more. This was life in the winter months. Mama came out of the kitchen, smiling. In the winter, it seemed, she was always smiling. She had bloomed here in Alaska, just as Lenny had. Ironically, they both felt safest in the winters, when the world was at its smallest and most dangerous. With Dad gone, they could breathe easily. They were the same height now, she and Lenny. Their protein-heavy diet had made them both as lean and lithe as ballerinas. Mama took her place at the table and said,
"I'm shooting the moon this time. Just letting you get your strategy set."
"All the way?"
Mr. Walker said.
"Or just most of the way, like usual?"
Mama laughed.
"You'll eat those words, Tom."
She started dealing. Lenny did some pretending in the winter, just as she did in the summer. Like now, she pretended not to notice how Mama and Mr. Walker looked at each other, how careful they were never to actually touch each other, how Mama sometimes sighed when she mentioned his name. Some things were dangerous. They all knew that. Lenny bent to her task. She was concentrating so keenly on making her cuts that it was a moment before she noticed the sound of an engine. Then she saw a flash of headlights come through the window, illuminating the cabin in a staccato burst. Moments later, the cabin door opened. Dad walked in. He wore a faded, frayed trucker's hat, pulled low on his brow, his long beard and mustache untended. After months on the pipeline, he had the sinewy, hard look of a man who drank too much and ate too little. The harsh Alaskan weather had given his skin a lined, leathery look. Mama shot to her feet, looking instantly anxious.
"Ernst, you're home early. You should have told me you were coming."
"Yeah,"
he said, looking at Mr. Walker.
"I can see why you'd want to know." "It's just a hand of cards with neighbors,"
Mr. Walker said, pushing to his feet.
"But we'll leave you to your reunion."
He walked past Dad, who didn't take a step backward, forced Mr. Walker to change course, took his parka from the hook by the door, and put it on.
"Thanks, gals."
When he was gone, Mama stared at Dad, her face pale, her mouth parted slightly. She had a breathless, worried look about her. Large Marge stood up.
I can't get my stuff together quick enough, so I'll just stay tonight, if you don't mind. I'm sure you don't.
Dad didn't spare Large Marge a glance. He had eyes only for Mama.
Far be it from me to tell a fat woman what to do.
Large Marge laughed and walked away from the dining table. She plopped onto the sofa Dad had bought from a hotel going out of business in Anchorage, put her slippered feet up on the new coffee table. Mama went to Dad, put her arms around him, pulled him close.
Hey, you,
she whispered, kissing his throat.
I missed you.
They fired me. Sons of bitches.
Oh, no, Mama said. What happened? Why?
A lying son of a bitch said I was drinking on the job, and my boss is a prick. It wasn't my fault.
Poor Ernst, Mama said. You never get a break.
He touched Mama's face, tilted her chin up, kissed her hard.
God, I missed you,
he said against her lips. She moaned at his touch, molded her body to his. They drifted toward the bedroom, pushed through the clacking beads, apparently unaware that anyone else was in the cabin. Lenny heard them fall on the bed, heard their breathing accelerate. Lenny sat back on her heels. Good God. She would never understand her parents' relationship. It shamed Lenny. That unshakable love both she and her mama had for Dad gave her a bad, heartsick feeling. There was something wrong with them. She knew it. Saw it in the way Large Marge sometimes looked at Mama.
It ain't normal, kid,
Large Marge said. What is?
Who the hell knows? Crazy Pete is the happiest married person I know.
Well, Matilda's no ordinary goose. You hungry?
Large Marge patted her big belly.
You bet. Your mama's stew is my favorite.
I'll get us some. God knows they won't be out of the bedroom for a while.
Lenny wrapped up the meat she'd butchered, then washed her hands with water from the bucket by the sink. In the kitchen, she cranked up the radio as loud as it would go, but it wasn't enough to drown out the reunion in the bedroom. Breakup in Alaska. The season of melting, movement, noise, when the sunlight tentatively came back, shone down on dirty, patchy snow. The world shifted, shrugging off the cold, making sounds like great gears turning. Blocks of ice as big as houses broke free, floated downstream, hitting anything in their way. Trees groaned and fell over as the wet, unstable ground moved beneath them. Snow turned to slush and then to water that collected in every hollow and indentation in the land. Things lost in the snow were found again, a hat taken by the wind, a coil of rope. Beer cans that had been tossed into snowbanks floated to the muddy surface of the road. Black spruce needles lay in murky puddles, branches broken by storms floated in the water that ran downhill from every corner of their land. The goats stood knee-deep in a sucking muck. No amount of hay could soak it up. Water filled tree wells and ran along roadsides and pooled everywhere, reminding everyone that this part of Alaska was technically a rainforest. You could stand anywhere and hear ice cracking up and water sluicing from tree limbs and eaves along the sides of the road, running in rivulets along every indentation in the oversaturated ground. The animals came out of hiding. Moose ambled through town. No one ever took a turn too quickly. Sea ducks returned in squawking flocks and settled on waves in the bay. Bears came out of their dens and lumbered down hillsides looking for food. Nature was spring cleaning, scrubbing away the ice and cold and frost, clearing the windows to let in the light. On this beautiful blue evening, beneath the cerulean sky, Lenny stepped into her rubber, extra-tough boots and went outside to feed the animals. They had 7 goats now, and 13 chickens, and 4 ducks. Slogging through ankle-deep mud, along watery tire grooves, she heard voices. She turned toward the sound, toward the cove that was their family's link to the outside world. Although they had spent years here, the property remained stubbornly wild. Even in her own backyard, Lenny had to be careful. But on days like this, when the tide was in and water lapped up on the shell-strewn shore, it still took her breath away. Now she saw kayakers down on the water, a flotilla of brightly colored boats gliding past. Tourists, probably unaware of how fast things could change in Alaska. The water beneath them was calm, but the small bay filled and emptied twice a day in fast, rushing tides that could strand or drown the unwary before they recognized the danger. Mama came up beside Lenny. She smelled the familiar combination of cigarette smoke, rose hip soap, and lavender hand cream that would always remind her of her mother. Mama looped one arm over Lenny's shoulder, gave her a playful hip bump. They watched the kayakers glide into the cove, heard their laughter echo across the water. Lenny wondered what their lives were like, those outside kids who came up here for a vacation and backpacked up mountainsides and dreamed of living off the land and then went back to their suburban homes and their changing lives. Behind them, the red truck rumbled to life.
"It's time to go, girls," Dad yelled.
Mama took Lenny's hand. They began walking toward Dad.
"We shouldn't go to the meeting," Lenny said when they reached him.
Dad looked at her. In their years in Alaska, he had aged, turned thin and wiry. Fine lines bracketed his eyes, creased his sunken cheeks.
"Why?"
"It will upset you."
"You think I'd run from a walker? You think I'm a coward?"
"Dad,
this is our community, too. No one loves Connick more than I do. If Walker wants to act like a big shot and call a meeting, we're going. Get in the truck."
They crammed into the old truck. Connick was a different town than it had been when they moved here, and her father hated each and every change. He hated that there was now a foot ferry that brought tourists from Homer. He hated that you had to slow down for them because they walked in the middle of the road and wandered around googly-eyed, pointing to every eagle and hawk and seal. He hated that the new fishing charter business in town was thriving, and sometimes there wasn't an empty seat at the diner. He hated people who came to visit, looky-loos, he called them, but even more, he hated the outsiders who'd moved in, building houses near town, taming their lots with fences, and building garages. On this warm evening, a few hardy tourists moved down Main Street, taking pictures and talking loudly enough to startle the dogs tied up along the roadside. They gathered outside the brand new Snackle Shop, where you could buy snacks and fishing tackle. A sign on the Kicking Moose Saloon read, "Town Meeting Sunday Night, 7 p.m.
"What are we, Seattle?"
Dad muttered.
"Our last meeting was 2 years ago," Mama said, "when Tom Walker donated the lumber to repair the transient dock."
"You think I don't know that?"
he said, pulling into a parking space.
"You think I need you telling me that? I can hardly forget Tom Walker acting like a big shot, shoving his money in our noses."
He parked in front of the burnt-out Kicking Moose Saloon. The bar's door was flung wide open in welcome. Lenny followed her parents into the saloon. For all the changes that had taken place in town, this was the one place that had remained the same. No one in Connick cared about the blackened walls or the smell of char as long as the booze flowed. The place was already packed. Men and women, mostly men, in flannel shirts were bellied up to the bar. A few scrawny dogs lay curled beneath the bar stools and out of the way. Everyone was talking at once and music played in the background. A dog whined along to the sound, howled once before a boot shut him up. Mad Earl saw them and waved. Dad nodded and headed to the bar. Old Jim was bartending, as he had for decades. With no teeth and rheumy eyes and a beard as sparse as his vocabulary, he was slow behind the bar but congenial. Everyone knew Old Jim would give them a drink on credit or take some moose meat in trade. Rumor was, it had been that way at the Moose since Tom Walker's dad built the saloon in 1942.
"Whiskey double,"
Dad yelled out to Jim.
"And a Rainier beer for the missus."
He slapped a handful of wadded-up pipeline bills on the table. Taking his drink and Mama's beer, he headed to the corner, where Mad Earl and Thelma and Ted and Clyde and the rest of the Harlan clan had staked out a collection of plastic chairs clustered around an overturned barrel. Thelma smiled up at Mama, pulled a white plastic chair in beside her. Mama sat down, and the two women immediately bent their heads together and started talking. In the past few years, they had become good friends. Thelma, Lenny had learned over the years, was like most of the Alaskan women who dared to live in the bush, tough and steady and honest to a fault. But you didn't want to mess with her.
"Hey, Lenny,"
Moppet said, smiling up with her mouth full of witch-away's teeth. Her sweatshirt was too big, and her pants were too short, exposing at least 3 inches of pipe-cleaner-thin shins above her slumped woolen socks and ankle boots. Lenny smiled down at the 8-year-old. "Hey, Mop."
"Axel was home yesterday. I almost shot him with my arrow," she said with a grin. "Boy, was he pissarood."
Lenny bit back a smile.
"You got new pictures to show me?"
"Sure. I'll bring them next time we come up." Lenny leaned back against the burnt log wall, Moppet tucked in close beside her. At the front of the bar, a bell clanged. The conversations around the bar quieted, but didn't silence. Town meetings might be an accepted custom off the grid, but you could never really shut up a room full of Alaskans. Tom Walker moved into place behind the bar, smiled.
"Hey, neighbors. Thank you for coming. I see a lot of old friends in this room, and plenty of new faces. To our new neighbors, hello and welcome. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Tom Walker. My father, Eckhart Walker, came to Alaska before most of you were born. He panned for gold, but found his real wealth in land, here in Conic. He and my mom homesteaded 160 acres and staked their claim." "Here we go,"
Dad said sourly, downing his drink.
"Now we're gonna hear all about his buddy the governor, and how they went crab fishing when they were kids, good God. 3 generations of my family have lived on the same land. This place is not just where we live, it's who we are. But times are changing. You know what I'm talking about. New faces attest to the changes. Alaska is the last frontier. People are hungry to see our state before it changes even more."
"So what?"
someone yelled.
"Tourists are flooding the banks of the Kenai River during king season. They're navigating our waters in kayaks. They're packing the marine ferry system and coming to our dock in droves. Cruise ships are going to start bringing thousands of people up here, not just hundreds. I know Ted's charter business has doubled in the last 2 years, and you can't get a seat at the diner in the summer. Word is that the foot ferry between us and Seldovia and Homer could be filled every day."
"We came up here to get away from all that,"
Dad shouted.
"Why are you telling us all this, Tommy?"
Large Marge called out from the corner.
"Glad you asked, Marge,"
Mr. Walker said.
"I finally decided to spend some money on the moose, fix the old girl up. It's about time we had a bar that didn't blacken our palms and the seat of our pants."
Someone whooped out in agreement. Dad got to his feet.
"You think we need a citified bar? That we need to welcome the idiots who come up here in sandals with cameras hanging around their necks?"
People turned to look at Dad.
"I don't think a little paint and some ice behind the bar will hurt us,"
Mr. Walker said evenly. The crowd laughed.
"We came here to get away from the outside and that screwed up world. I say we say no to Mr. Big Shot improving this saloon. Let Chicchacos go to the salty dog to drink." "I'm not building a bridge to the mainland, for God's sake,"
Mr. Walker said.
"My dad built this town, don't forget. I was working at the saloon when you were trying out for Little League in the outside. It's all mine."
He paused.
"All of it. Did you forget that? And now that I think of it, I better fix up the old boarding house, too. People need somewhere to sleep. Hell, I'll call it the Geneva. She'd like that."
He was needling Dad. Lenny saw it in Mr. Walker's eyes. The animosity between the two men was ever present. Oh, they tried to walk a wide berth around each other, but it was always there. Only now, Mr. Walker wasn't moving aside.
"Do you friggin' believe this?"
Dad turned to Mad Earl.
"What's next? A casino? A Ferris wheel?"
Mad Earl frowned, got to his feet.
"Hold on a sec here, Tom."
"It's just 10 rooms, Earl,"
Mr. Walker said.
"It welcomed guests 100 years ago when Russian fur traders and missionaries walked these streets. My mother made the stained glass windows in the lobby. The inn is a part of our history, and now she's all boarded up like a widow in black. I'll make her shine again.
He paused, looking right at Dad.
No one can stop me from improving this town.
Just 'cause you're rich, you don't get to shove us all around,
Dad yelled. Ernt, Thelma said, I think you're making too much of this. Ernt shot Thelma a sharp look.
We don't want a bunch of tourists climbing up our asses. We say no to this. No, goddammit.
Mr. Walker reached up to the bell above the bar, clanged it.
Drinks are on the house,
he said with a smile. There was an immediate uproar, people clapping and whooping and bellying up to the bar.
Don't let him buy you with a few free drinks, Dad shouted. This idea of his is bad. If we wanted to live in a city, we'd be somewhere else, damn it. And what if he doesn't stop there?
No one was listening. Even Mad Earl was moving toward the bar for his free drink.
You never did know when to shut up, Ernt, Large Marge said, sidling up to him.
She was wearing a knee-length, hand-beaded suede coat over flannel pajama pants tucked into mucklucks.
Does anyone make you get a business license to fix boat engines down at the dock?
No, we don't. If Tom wants to turn this place into Barbie's dream house, none of us will tell him otherwise. That's why we're here, to do whatever we want, not to do what you want us to. I've taken shit from men like him all of my life.
Yeah? Well, maybe that's more about you than him,
Large Marge said.
Shut your fat mouth,
Dad snapped.
Come on, Lenny.
He grabbed Mama by the bicep and pulled her through the crowd.
All right.
Lenny heard Mr. Walker's big voice behind them. Almost to the door, Dad stopped, turned. He yanked Mama close in beside him. She stumbled, almost fell. Mr. Walker moved toward Dad, and people came with him, stood close, drinks in hand. Mr. Walker looked casual until you saw his eyes and the way his mouth tightened when he looked at Mama. He was pissed.
Come on, Albright. Don't run off. Be neighborly,
Mr. Walker said.
There's money to be made, man, and change is natural, unavoidable. I won't let you change our town,
Dad said.
I don't care how much money you have.
Yes, you will,
Mr. Walker said.
You have no choice. So, let it go and lose gracefully. Have a drink.
Gracefully? Didn't Mr. Walker know by now? Dad wasn't one to let things go. 13. All the next day, Dad paced and fumed and railed about dangerous changes and the future. At noon, he got on the ham radio and called for a meeting at the Harlan family compound. For the entirety of the day, Lenny had a bad feeling, a hollowness in the pit of her stomach. The hours passed slowly, but still they passed. After dinner, they drove up to the compound. Now they were all waiting impatiently for the meeting to start. Chairs had been dragged out of cabins and unstacked from sheds and set up in a haphazard fashion on the muddy ground facing Mad Earl's porch. Thelma sat in a white plastic chair, with Moppet sprawled uncomfortably across her, the girl too big for her mother's lap. Ted stood behind his wife, smoking a cigarette. Mama sat beside Thelma in an Adirondack chair with only one arm, and Lenny was beside her, sitting in a metal fold-out chair that had sunk into the muck. Clyde and Donna stood like sentinels on either side of Martha and Agnes, both of whom were carving sticks of wood into spikes. All eyes were on Dad, who stood on the porch alongside Mad Earl. There was no sign of whiskey between them, but Lenny could tell they had been drinking. A dreary rain fell. Everything was gray. Gray skies, gray rain, gray trees, lost in a gray haze. Dogs barked and snapped at the ends of rusty chains. Several stood atop small doghouses and watched the proceedings in the center of the compound. Dad looked out over the crowd gathered in front of him, which was the smallest it had ever been. In the last few years, the young adults had ventured off their grandfather's land in search of their own lives. Some fished in the Bering Sea, others rangered up in the national park. Last year, Axel had impregnated a native girl and was now living in a Yupik settlement somewhere.
We all know why we're here, Dad said.
His long hair was a dirty mess, and his beard was thick and untrimmed. His skin was winter pale. A red bandana covered most of his head, kept his hair out of his face. He patted Mad Earl's scrawny shoulder.
This man saw the future long before any of the rest of us. He knew somehow that our government would fail us, that greed and crime would destroy everything we love about America. He came up here, brought you all here, to live a better, simpler life, one that went back to the land. He wanted to hunt his food and protect his family and be away from the bullshit that goes on in cities.
Dad paused, looked out at the people gathered in front of him.
It's all worked. Until now. Tell him, Ernt,
Mad Earl said, leaning forward, reaching down for a jug hidden beneath his chair, uncorking it with a thunk.
Tom Walker is a rich, arrogant prick, Dad said. We've all known men like him. He didn't go to Nam. Guys like him had a million ways to dodge the draft. Unlike me and Bo and our friends who stood up for our country. But hey, I can get over that too. I can get over his holier-than-thou attitude and his rubbing his money in my face. I can get over him leering at my wife.
He stepped down the rickety porch steps, splashed into the murky water that pooled along the bottom step.
But I will not let him destroy Connick and our way of life. This is our home. We want it to stay wild and free.
He's fixing up the tavern, Ernt, not building a convention center, Thelma said.
At her raised voice, Moppet got up and walked away, went over to play with Martha and Agnes.
And a hotel,
Mad Earl said.
Don't forget that, Missy.
Thelma looked at her father.
Come on, Dad. You guys are making a mountain out of a molehill. There are no roads over here, no services, no electricity. All this complaining is counterproductive. Just let it go.
I don't want to complain,
Dad said.
I want to do something, and by Christ I will. Who's with me?
Damn right,
Mad Earl said, his voice a little slurred.
He'll raise the price of drinks,
Clyde complained.
You watch.
I didn't move out into the bush so I could have a hotel nearby,
Dad said. Mad Earl grumbled something, took a long drink. Lenny watched the men come together, each one clapping Dad on the back as if he had said the perfect thing. Within moments, the women were left sitting alone in the muddy center of the compound.
Ernt is pretty worked up over a little fixing up of the saloon, Thelma said, watching the men.
You could see them ingesting righteous anger, puffing up with it, passing the jug from one to the other.
I thought he'd let it go.
Mama lit a cigarette.
He never lets anything go. I know you two don't have much influence with him, Thelma said, looking from Mama to Lenny. But he could start a shitstorm up here.
Tom Walker may have a new truck and own the best land on the peninsula, but he'll give you the shirt off his back. Last year, when Mop was so sick, Tom heard about it from Large Marge and showed up here on his own and flew her to Kenai.
I know, Mama said quietly. Your husband's going to rip this town apart if we aren't careful.
Mama gave a tired laugh. Lenny understood. You could be as careful as a chemist with nitroglycerin around, Dad. It wouldn't change a thing. Sooner or later, he was going to blow. Once again, Lenny's parents got so drunk she had to drive them home. Back at the cabin, she parked the truck and helped Mama into her room, where she collapsed into bed, laughing as she reached for Dad. Lenny climbed up to her own bed, to the mattress they'd salvaged from the dump and cleaned with bleach, and lay beneath her army surplus blankets and tried to fall asleep. But the incident at the saloon and the meeting with the Harlans stayed with her. Something about it was deeply unsettling, although she couldn't quite put her finger on any one moment and say, there, that's what bothered me. Maybe just a sense of imbalance in her dad that was, if not new, a magnification. Change. Slight, but apparent. Her dad was angry, maybe furious. But why? Because he'd been fired from the pipeline? Because he'd seen Mama and Tom Walker together in March, seen Mr. Walker sitting at their table? It had to be something more than what it seemed. How could a few businesses in town upset him so much? God knew he liked to drink whiskey at the Kicking Moose more than most men. She rolled over for the box by her bed, the one that held Matthew's letters from the last few years. Not a month had gone by without word from him. She had each letter memorized and could pull them up at will. Some sentences never left her. I'm getting better. I thought of you last night when I was out to dinner. This kid had a huge Polaroid camera. I scored my first goal yesterday. I wish you'd been there. And her favorites, when he said things like, I miss you, Lenny. Or, I know it sounds lame, but I dreamed of you. Do you ever dream of me? Tonight, though, she didn't want to think about him and how far away he was or how lonely she felt without him and his friendship. In the years he'd been gone, no new kids had moved into Conic. She had learned to love Alaska, but she was lonely a lot, too. On bad days, like today, she didn't want to read his letters and wonder if he would ever come back, and she worried that if she wrote to him, she would accidentally say what was really on her mind. I'm afraid, she might say. I'm lonely. Instead, she opened her latest book, The Thornbirds, and lost herself in the story of a forbidden love in a harsh and inhospitable land. She was still reading well past midnight when she heard the rustling of beads. She expected to hear the clank of the wood stove door opening and closing, but all she heard were footsteps moving across the wooden floor. She eased out of bed and crawled to the edge of the loft and peered down. In the dark, with only the wood stove's glow for light, it took her eyes a moment to adjust. Dad was dressed all in black, with an Alaska Aces baseball cap pulled low on his forehead. He was carrying a big gear bag that clanked as he walked. He opened the front door and stepped out into the night. Lenny climbed down the loft stairs and went quietly to the window and peeked out. A full moon shone down on the muddy yard. Here and there, stubborn patches of crusty brown snow caught the light. There were piles of junk all around, boxes of fishing tackle and camping supplies, rusting metal crates and contraptions, a broken gate, another bicycle Dad had never gotten around to fixing, a stack of blown-out tires. Dad tossed the gear bag into the bed of the truck, then slogged over to the plywood shed where they kept their tools. A moment later, he came out carrying an axe over one shoulder. He climbed into the truck and drove away. The next morning, Dad was in a good mood. His shaggy black hair was drawn into a weirdo Jesus samurai topknot that had fallen to one side and looked like a puppy's ear. His thick black beard was full of wood shavings, and so was his mustache.
There's our sleepyhead. Did you stay up reading last night?
Yeah, Lenny said, eyeing him uneasily. He pulled her into his arms, danced with her until she couldn't help smiling. The worry she'd had since last night slowly released. What a relief. And on the first Saturday in April, one of her favorite days of the year, salmon days. Today, the town would come together to celebrate the upcoming salmon season. The festivities had begun under another name, started by the native tribe that had once lived here. They had come together to ask for a good fishing season. Now, though, it was just a town party. On today of all days, the unpleasantness of last night would be forgotten. A little after 2 o'clock, after all their chores were done, Lenny loaded her arms with containers of food and followed her parents out of the cabin. Blue sky stretched as far as the eye could see. The pebbled beach looked iridescent in the sunlight, with its broken clamshells scattered like pieces of wedding lace. They loaded food and blankets and a bag full of rain gear and extra coats. The weather wasn't reliable this time of year, into the back of the truck. Then they squished into the cab's bench seat, and Dad drove off. In town, they parked by the bridge and walked toward the general store.
What in the world?
Mama said when they rounded the corner. Main Street was crowded, but not in the way it should be. There should have been men gathered around barbecues, grilling moose burgers and reindeer sausage and fresh clams, swapping fishtails, drinking beers. The women should have been by the diner, fussing over long tables set up with food, halibut sandwiches, platters of Dungeness crab, buckets of steamed clams, vats of baked beans. Instead, half the town people stood on the boardwalk on the water side of town, and the other half stood in front of the saloon. It was like some weird OK Corral showdown. Then Lenny saw the saloon. Every window was broken. The door had been hacked to bits, left as sharp shards of wood hanging from brass hinges, and white spray-painted graffiti covered the burnt walls. "This is a warning. Stay away. Arrogant prick. No progress." Tom Walker stood in front of the ruined saloon, with Large Marge and Natalie standing to his left and Ms. Rhodes and her husband on his right. Lenny recognized the rest of the people standing with him, most of the town's merchants and fishermen and outfitters. These were the people who'd come to Alaska for something. Across the street, on the boardwalk, stood the off-the-gridders, the outcasts, the loners, folks who lived in the bush with no access to their property except by sea or air, and who had come here to get away from something. Creditors, the government, the law, child support, modern life. Like her dad, they wanted Alaska to remain wild to her fingertips forever. If they had their way, there would never be electricity or tourists or telephones or paved roads or flush toilets. Dad walked confidently forward. Lenny and Mama rushed to keep up with him. Tom Walker strode out to meet Dad in the middle of the street. He threw a can of spray paint onto the ground at Dad's feet. It clanged in the dirt, rolled sideways.
"You think I don't know it was you? You think everyone doesn't know it was you, you crazy asshole?"
Dad smiled.
"Something happened last night, Tom? Vandalism? What a shame."
Lenny noticed how powerful Mr. Walker looked beside her father, how steady. Lenny couldn't imagine Tom Walker ever stumbling around drunk or talking to himself or waking up screaming and crying.
"You're worse than a coward, Albright. You're stupid. Sneaking around in the dark to break windows and spray paint words on wood I'm going to tear down anyway."
"He wouldn't do that, Tom," Mama said, taking care to keep her gaze downcast. She knew better than to look at Tom directly, especially not at a time like this.
"He was home last night."
Mr. Walker took a step forward.
"Listen closely, Ernt. I'm going to let this go as a mistake, but progress is coming to Connick. You'd do anything, anything, to hurt my business from here on out, and I'm not going to call a town meeting. I'm going to call the cops. I'm coming for you. You don't scare me, rich boy."
This time, Mr. Walker smiled.
"Like I said, stupid."
Mr. Walker turned back to the crowd, many of whom had drawn in close to hear the argument.
"We're all friends here. Neighbors. A few words painted on wood don't mean anything. Let's get this party started."
People reacted immediately, rearranged themselves. Women drifted over to the food tables while men fired up the barbecues. Down at the end of the street, the band started up. "Lay down, Sally, and rest you in my arms." Dad took Mama by the hand and led her down the street, bobbing his head in time to the beat. Lenny was left standing alone, a girl caught between two factions. She felt the schism in town, the disagreement that could easily become a fight for the soul of what Connick should be. This could get ugly. Lenny knew what her father had done, and the vandalism revealed a new side to his rage. It terrified her that he had done such a public thing. Ever since Mr. Walker and Large Marge had first sent Dad to the pipeline for the winter, Dad had been on his guard. He never hit Mama in the face or anywhere that a bruise could be seen. He worked hard, beyond hard, at controlling his temper. He walked a wide, respectful berth around Mr. Walker. No more, it seemed. Lenny didn't realize that Tom Walker had come up beside